The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
It is the APC podcast once again from AcmePackingCompany.com and SB Nation talking 3-0 Green Bay Packers for as long as that is possible and relevant. Follow the show at the APC Pod on Twitter. Like, subscribe, all that fun nonsense. I'm Zach Rapport, at Zach Rapport on Twitter, dialing it in from my home office in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And in his home office slash spare room slash whatever you want to call it, it's Alex Patakis. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. I don't have much to add to that. I'm in a good mood, as about as happy as I've been in a long time, as it relates to football. So, I'm excited to talk about this seemingly very good team.
We, before the season started, we kind of mused, is this season going to feel real? We're three games in, we've watched a bunch of games on TV. What do you think? Is it feeling real? Is it still weird? Little of both.
It's feeling pretty real. I also joked that it'll feel real if they win and less real if they lose. So that's certainly helping. But, you know, I don't miss the fans on TV. If anything, I think the lack of fans has, you know, provided some advantages that I think we're, as by we, I mean the Packers, but that our team that we root for is actually well equipped to take advantage of, particularly the hard count and a lot of the pre-snap communications. So, you know, it feels real also because there haven't been stoppages, although I think I saw today that there were a number of positive COVID tests. I don't know if that's going to lead to any type of like change up of the schedule. I don't think that there's been any talk about that, but I believe like 8 players across 2 teams or players and staff tested positive.
Oh, I missed that.
I think the Vikings were one of them. I got this notification like maybe an hour ago. So if that stuff starts to happen and we start to see any type of cancellations or postponements, I think that will alter it. But so far it feels like week 4 of an exciting football season.
I always assumed that the first big outbreak slash any kind of anything hinky going on would be in Tampa Bay, because weren't they the team that had like that crazy MRSA outbreak years ago?
Oh yeah, and you know Florida. Yeah. I think maybe the Dolphins were the other team. Actually, yeah. I'd have to go back. I shouldn't just be guessing, but the Bucks, the Dolphins, I guess the Jags. I mean, 3 teams down in that state where things are getting wacky,
it's swampy. It's humid. I shouldn't laugh. MRSA is super human. Serious. It's a yeah. Serious thing.
But anyway, none of that matters. What matters is Aaron's got his groove back.
Hell yeah. So. 37-30 was the final score in New Orleans. And why don't we get right into it with our notable nuggets, hashtag note nugs. After every game, tweet at us. Give us your bite-sized little chewable nugget coming out of this game. And we didn't talk about what we were covering. Do you want to go first? Want me to go first? Who cares?
Why don't you kick us off?
All right. Well, I'm going to lean a little bit negative in my note nug, just because sometimes I think we need a reality check. And I'm thinking of the play, what I'm now calling the play. Kamara makes, I believe, 6 guys miss on his way to the end zone. It was a clinic in like how not to try to contain and tackle a runner. And it might be the most vicariously embarrassed I've ever been as a spectator for my team, for the players on the field. Maybe that's hyperbole. I don't know. There are other plays that come to mind. But the point stands, this defense still can't really stop the run. It's not built that way. You know, is this another season where we ride this wave of optimism all the way into the postseason only to have like a great backfield or some kind of shifty gadget player just embarrass the team on national TV? I hope not. I don't think so. And I hope not. And I know that, you know, Clark being out, for example, changes the defense. I'm just saying that moment gave me flashbacks on Sunday night and I didn't like those flashbacks. And I just wanted to state that for the record. I feel like this is a safe space. I can get my feelings out in the open and not be judged. And we can be positive for the rest of the show now, green and gold glasses. But yeah, I don't know. I just flashbacks. I didn't like them.
That particular play was so infuriating that I also had just a similar reaction where I was compelled to like text somebody about how furious I was, which I'm pretty sure I sent that text to you. And we talked last week about how, you know, with 99.9 degree of certainty, like Alvin Kamara would just tear up the Packers. Yep. There are I think the reason that play was so frustrating is like that's just something that feels like it consistently happens to the Packers, whereas like a rarity to everybody else, and it's always the obvious guy.
Yep.
You know, Bill Belichick is touted as the guy who takes away your greatest strength. The Packers are the team that just like lays down and lets your greatest strength like run rampant all over them. And it felt like they were watching in awe of him instead of like actually trying to fucking prevent it from happening. And that was maddening. But damn, man. Yeah, that was like a clown show. Like what the hell was that?
Like cue the Benny Hill music. It was a little bit of a clown show.
And he just absolutely tore them up. Yeah. It didn't matter, but still, like, you can't feel great about just, like, how one-dimensional it feels like the Saints are without Michael Thomas, how Drew Brees doesn't throw down the field, and how it didn't even matter. That's kind of concerning. Yeah.
I'm going to skip ahead just a second to do a listener note nug, and it's the last negative thing I promise, guys. We will be positive. We're happy about a 3-0 team. But I wanted to shout out to Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago, on Twitter, whose note nug is, everything I've seen through three games makes me think we'll lose in the NFC Championship game to a quarterback who only has to throw eight passes. LOL. That's, you know, that's just, he's just alluding, I think, to the same flashbacks that I am. But I'm positive now. I'm going to be positive. I'm happy.
Yeah.
It was a great game.
Well, yes. Yeah. Okay. If I had to be positive, I would think it would be that I think the big beast in the NFC this year is not going to be a team with that profile. It's going to be a team more of with the profile of the Packers, like where Russell Wilson's just going to throw five touchdowns against us instead of instead of Chris Carson running for, 250 yards against us. Anyway, I'll move on to my notable nugget. I will keep it positive. And it's going to be something that was pointed out on the broadcast, but it's kind of like a combo meal nugget thing. It was pointed out on the broadcast that, and I know that Sunday Night Football makes like a huge effort to try to put all these like advanced stats in your face because of Collinsworth and the PFF relationship and all that. But, you know, it feels like the frustrating Packer offense of old, and not just the McCarthy one, but even the LaFleur one of last year where Rodgers doesn't release the ball very quickly. I think we can like safely like put that to bed. I feel confident that we're fully past that.
Yeah.
And they showed something about the release time and what a drastic drop that is. I think that's pretty impressive when we're talking about a team that, you know, isn't necessarily like loaded with weapons, but still is extremely efficient at getting the ball out to the right guy. And I don't know if like the offensive line has been as good because of that, or if it's just like this perfect combination of a better understanding of the offense, getting the ball out quicker, two guys who can make some plays, and the offensive line is blocking really well.
Yeah.
But the fact that like it once, I guess my nugget, if I had to like, you know, just condense it, it would just be the combination of Aaron Rodgers, you know, getting the ball out of his hands quickly and an offensive line that has, what are they, allowed 2 sacks through 3 games? And the Saints blitzed a lot in that game, quite a bit in that game. That combination of the line keeping him clean and him already being more prone to get the ball out quick, that's like 2011 shit, man. Like, that's that is a recipe for success that makes me feel like we could see like some career best type numbers, or at least, you know, somewhere in that vicinity for Rodgers. So that's just going to like be so fun to watch this year.
Yeah. And on a related note, I almost went, if I was going to go positive with my note nug, I was going to say, you know, despite all of the questions on the offensive line and a bit of shuffling around, the Saints have a really good pass rush. They bring the pressure. They're usually pretty successful. It's a thing that they do well. And even still, I thought the offensive line held up pretty well, and Rodgers did a great job getting the ball out. And yeah, we see the results. 37 points. Feels good.
Yeah, 37. The lowest scoring total so far this season.
I know, a lowly 37 points.
Which is incredible. With the Falcons coming up next, like that could be another 45 right there. So that's pretty exciting.
Agreed. Let's do some listener note nugs at the APC pod on Twitter is where you can tweet at us after the show with your notable nuggets. I'm just going to read some names because I'm getting a lot of Big Bob love, and I love it, but I can't read them all. But shout out to Glenn, Steve, Jacob, Michael. That's four people in a row whose note nug was basically some version of Timber.
I mean, is he like, are we ready to
Big f-ing Bob? Just wait for the curse word and then you're good to go.
are we ready to crown him as tight end one? That feels like it's edging, like coming
I think
more and more reality with each game.
You know, I was actually ready to crown him as tight end one after we did an episode just before the season kicked off with Justice Mosqueda, and he, in all seriousness, was super stoked about Big Bob coming into the season, and he's just a guy that Justice is a guy that I trust a lot with those things. So, when you've got your guy, and Tanyan is my guy, you can tend to be a little bit clouded in optimism. So I was never one to get too publicly excited about him as a possible tight end one. But when someone like Justice Mosqueda says it's go time for this guy, I was like, yes, I'm on board. Tight end one, let's do it. And through 3 games, seems like it to me.
Yeah. Well, he's the talking point at tight end off of a game where Sternberger had like a decent comeback game, I guess. He sucked. Less. He didn't suck at all, actually, where he played pretty well. And Mercedes Lewis made a really nice scoring grab. So that's something, right?
Yep.
Tanyan's still the guy we're talking about.
Yep. One last note nug I wanted to read from Molly, because this one we can do a little bit of a back and forth on. But she says, honestly, would love to hear a deep dive into how Rodgers has been so incredibly chill and relaxed and happy in all of his media availabilities this year. It's just so fun to see. We talked a little bit about this last year in terms of he actually came out and said, like, the game is fun again. Football is fun again. But this year, I mean, he got sacked and he got up smiling. I don't remember the last time I saw that. And then certainly in post-game interviews, and now he's doing that stuff with Pat McAfee. He just seems like really at ease.
Yeah. Back to the good old days, right? Weekly radio show.
More profanity on this particular radio show than in years past.
Yeah. Fine with me. It's easy to be happy when you get sacked, but it happens, once in a blue moon, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt that he was rejuvenated with LaFleur last year, but there was still some frustrations in the performance level. Now, the rejuvenation from like a, you know, locker room / culture standpoint is being married with rejuvenation of him, you know, like his numbers, him being back in an MVP conversation, like all of those things. That, you know, it just that is like it's so refreshing because I think it will last, and I think it will just usher in like this like wonderful golden age of Rodgers football, or in his golden years. I don't mean gold, like, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see sustained dominance like we did, but if these are his last few seasons here, they're going to be good ones.
Yeah.
And I think he's realized that. And maybe even like part of his acceptance that he can't like control what they do in the draft, and that he basically sounded resigned in the offseason to not finishing his career here. Maybe like that weird, I don't know if that creates pressure in any way, but I don't know. Like, don't you think to some degree, like he, the Packers already like played their hand with the future of the quarterback position. Now he doesn't have to worry about it. I don't know. That maybe is like digging way too deep.
Yeah.
Talking about a deep dive.
Well, it also might be a little bit reductive insofar as, and we've touched on this a little bit, but, you know, Love has to be good. They have to see something from him in order to truly feel comfortable making that transition, and, you know, maybe through the scout team and just sort of those reps that we don't get to see, maybe they will see something the same way that Andrew Brandt tells the story about the first pass he saw Rodgers complete in training camp was a 60-yard bomb to Driver, and he connected eyes. Brandt connected eyes with Ted Thompson, and they shared this look like, oh yeah, we're good. Like, maybe they have that moment with Jordan Love. We don't know, but he's got to be good. So that's, you know, the missing piece of the puzzle there, of course.
Yeah. Maybe Rodgers is really happy because he feels like they've fixed so many other areas of the team that they have nothing left to draft but a receiver next year. Because everyone has just been so much better than we thought.
Yeah.
And all of our fullbacks and tight ends are just like contributing in such a big way that we could only add a luxury that is the receiver.
Indeed. One last thing here, a mini nug that I'll use to transition into a bit of a topic. But John Ramos, with his note nug, says LaFleur is a monster. That touchdown play on the one in the fourth was beautiful. And I just wanted, first of all, an excuse to play our LaFleur sounder. You don't have your French flag on that desk, do you? It's gone. The look on your face.
It's somewhere, but it's not right here.
You looked legitimately frustrated that you couldn't find the flag. So I just wanted, firstly, to give a shout out to LaFleur, who is turning into one hell of a play caller, and it is really, really fun to watch. But the second part of John's tweet is 5-0 without Adams now, and that made me think. You know, the Packers are 5-0 in the Matt LaFleur era, playing without Davante Adams. Alex, can you square that circle of like Adams is a top five receiver and yet they're undefeated without him? Is that just LaFleur is awesome, or what's going on there?
Yeah, I think a large part of it has to be a credit to LaFleur, because he's basically been everything that we wanted, which is crazy to say. I mean, a 16-3 record is ridiculous. And having, you know, for two years in a row, missing what feels like your only legitimate, like real threat that the defense has to worry about at wide receiver and still being able to produce was exceptional. I think, and I think the credit, it goes to LaFleur, the way he uses what feels like the whole roster, like at his disposal. He uses obviously Aaron Jones, Williams, Irvin, all of the tight ends. You know, seemingly all the receivers, for the most part, like you just feel like he uses the whole Buffalo. You know, it's like he's really just like maximizing everything they have. He's aggressive on third down, on fourth down opportunity. One of the most aggressive coaches in the NFL. He's basically everything you could have asked for if you were like back when you knew McCarthy was out and you were like, I need a modern day 2020 NFL head coach. He's all of those things. And I think all of those types of coaches can overcome an injury like Adams for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, the 49ers at no point last year were some team, you know, that was boasting this inflated receiving core, and they realized they had to win with their running backs, and they made the most of it with their running backs and their tight end.
Yep.
Like however you got to get it done, you get it done. And LaFleur has done that so far. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's anything about like Davante Adams. I still think he's extremely important while simultaneously believing that this team could beat most teams in the NFL without him. I think you could share both of those thoughts, right?
Yeah, I agree. Man, also the Shanahan coaching tree, man. WTF.
Yeah, for real. It's legit. Yeah, I don't know. It's just good to have one of those.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. I was like, can't be critical. I don't know what to do with myself.
I don't know what to do with myself. Speaking of legit, one more topic here as we move on. There was an article posted today at acmepackingcompany.com. We invite everyone to log on and check that out by our buddy Ryan Archon14 on the blog, titled "The Packers Are a Tier One Team and Aaron Rodgers is the Reason Why." It's a fun article. It's a good read. Go into a bunch of stats as Ryan is wont to do. Really compelling stuff, but really just generally on the narrative side, as we do here on our show. Are the Packers a tier one team? Obviously, Ryan thinks so, but I just kind of wanted to talk generally about that idea of tiers. And I know we're three games in, but I'll pose this question to you, I guess, Alex. You know, we're three games in. Who are the tier one teams? Let's leave the Packers out. Who else is in tier one, whatever that means to you?
Great question. Well, I cheated a little bit because I read the piece, and I know on a lot of these graphs, there's another team that is hovering around the Packers are, if not higher. I think the Seahawks are a tier one team.
Yep, I agree.
I think Russell Wilson, I think, you know, multiple five touchdown games, he's going to be enough to mask their flaws most of the year.
Yep.
This is going to bite me in the ass in January, but I just don't know if the 49ers are a tier one team right now.
Yeah.
And they have been really severely bitten by an injury bug that I think can change the complexion of their season. I would put the Chiefs there. I know they had a bad loss, but what they did to the Ravens on Monday Night Football makes me think that they are still, you know, Super Bowl contender, Super Bowl favorite in the AFC. Yep. I'd put them there. I'm struggling to find other teams that I really think I would lump in there, though.
Can I give you one more that is like a cusp maybe on my list, and that's the Steelers.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're 3-0, right?
They're 3-0, and I mean, their defense is really good. And if Ben Roethlisberger is going to be, better than Duck Hodges, then they're like a deep run playoff team.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And now, as crazy as it is, like one slip up, and I'm not writing the Ravens off by any means, but, that's going to be an interesting battle for the division title.
Yeah.
And if Pittsburgh wins the AFC North, it'd be hard not to think of them as a Super Bowl contender. Yeah, I think those are the only teams, really. I mean, the Bears are a fake 3-0. I'm trying to think of other 3-0 teams. They're 3-0, but I can't like ever consider them a real threat.
Yeah, well, let's pause right there on the Bears because they're 3-0, but now they make the switch to Nick Foles. I think they made that switch officially, which is kind of a no-brainer. But Nick Foles basically inherits two wins. And I don't know. I just feel like maybe they could. I'm not saying they're not a tier one team. I think, but a lot of Packer fans are quick to just say, "Oh, these guys are frauds and they're going to blow it." But you know, can Nick Foles throw together three or four wins over the next couple weeks? And then if they do, they're undefeated or very close to undefeated, and then they're super frisky. I don't know. I'm not worried about the Bears right now, and I hope that I can eat those words later. But I don't know. I also haven't watched them very much, so maybe it's an ignorant opinion.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm not writing them off. I just don't think. I think even without watching them much, if they were a tier one team, you'd know. I think Nick Foles is like one of the guys you can't write off because he's just done it at a level he's done the whole like I can just win us a game to the highest level that you could possibly do it in the sport, right?
Yep.
Like, so We'd be dumb to just say that they're, you know, eventually that the wheels are going to come off at some point. But tier one, I think you have to establish a little bit of dominance. And I don't really feel like that they've done that. Whereas the Packers, I think, I guess it was a one score win in New Orleans, but it felt like almost a blowout towards the end.
Yeah.
And then 40 plus points in your first two games and what feels like they're just rolling. And then what the Seahawks did, right? Like, just the ridiculous numbers that they put up and like the way they can just score at any point in massive plays with Lockett and Metcalf. Like, it's just a different animal to me. The Bears might be like solidly tier two. I think at 3-0 so far, you have to put them there.
Yeah. Again, I'm not making the case for them being an elite team. I would put them right now, and we're only 3 weeks in, at that cusp tier three, tier two team. But again, like if you are on that cusp and you can string together like, I don't know, 9 wins in a season, you can, you know, ruin someone else's season in the postseason. It happens, I feel like, every year.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I could definitely see that happening. I don't know where we'd put the rest of the NFC West, I would say, is tier two.
Yeah.
Which, right, like I would put the Niners tier two for now. The Cardinals probably. Yep.
Rams.
That division is just, we said it last year. Like, we knew for years that division was about to become just an absolute, like, gauntlet.
Yeah.
And it really is now, which is going to help the Packers as well because, you know, they're, those teams are going to beat up on each other, and the likelihood of maybe 13-3, you know, winning you home field advantage is higher.
Yeah. Right.
So we're, you know, last year,
I feel like that division is what we almost every year think the NFC North is going to be. It's just like, oh, it's just going to be tight. These just good teams. It's crowded there. Everyone's going to beat up on each other. And then, you know, you get halfway through the season and two teams are clearly sink into the bottom.
Yeah. So we'll, yeah, maybe that will happen again. Yeah. But I love rooting for the Cardinals for now. They're a fun team to watch. Yeah. So I want to see them be in that category with the others. And you know, the Rams maybe could be back. Maybe it was a blip in the radar for McVay.
Yep.
Because they've been having some success. So.
Yep. Really quickly, again, just a shout out to Ryan with that piece on the blog. Encourage everyone to go read that. The Packers are a tier one team, and Rodgers is the reason why, up at acmepackingcompany.com. And I think that's going to do it here until we preview the Falcons. What do you think?
That sounds good.
All right, let's hit
that
the
sounds poker. Good to me.
That is going to do it for us for a couple days here. We're going to be back on Friday to preview the matchup against the Falcons, as I just said, on Monday Night Football with SB Nation's Gina Thomas Kelly. Please consider giving us a rating in Apple Podcasts. If Patreon is your thing, you can go there too. Patreon.com/NoteNugs, NoteNugs. All right, guys. Until next time, go Pack, go. Keep your stick on the ice.